My daughters are trained to be historians.
Oh, thank you. That was kind of you to say.
Yes, I enjoyed it very much. So our next panel is called Choosing the Best Path for You, Making Good Decisions in Transition. And we have a wonderful panel for this. We have Johnny Lin, who is a past president of ASA and the author of a prominent undergrad textbook and a book on environmental science and is a professor of computer science. And we have Leslie Wickman, who is the executive director of the ASA and has a really wide range of science experience in a wonderful array of government, industry, and academic jobs and nonprofit ones. And then we have Deb Harsma, who is wonderful plenary you heard last night, and she leads BioLogos and has experience, as you know, in astronomy and physics. And so we're just really delighted to welcome them. And I thought that they all have a wide range of career experience in several different areas, and so I thought they would be wonderful people to talk about how you make a good decision when you're at a moment of transition and you need some wisdom for that. And I think we'll go in the order on the screen. So Johnny, if you would kick us off, that would be wonderful.
Why don't I start off with my one main piece of advice, and then I'll give you a little context of my strange career. The one piece of advice is there is a book called Designing Your Life by Bill Burnett and Dave Evans. And you need to get that book, especially if you're a student and you, actually it doesn't matter if you're a student. If you're near retirement or you're in the middle of your career or you're a student, that book is just an absolutely phenomenal book with regards to questions of what do I do with my life and how do I take steps to figure that out? Okay, so Burnett and Evans are both at the Stanford D School, so that's the product design school at Stanford, and this kind of tagline for the book is how do you apply product design principles, things like brainstorming, prototyping, things like that. How do you apply those to the whole problem of how do you figure out your career, design your life and stuff? The way I see it is the book is, what it's really, really good for is to help you when you're stuck. So whether you're stuck in a career that you've been in for decades and now you're like, I want to do something else, but I have no idea what in the world it is to do, or whether you just graduated and you're like, okay, now I have a degree in X, what am I supposed to do with that? And the answer, even though grad school is wonderful and I enjoy grad school, is not you have to go to grad school. You could go to grad school, but you could also, there's a whole variety of things you could do. But they give really, really specific tips on how do you get yourself unstuck. So specific means, the thing that really bugged me about a lot of career books were they would say things like, use your network. And for me, I'd be like, okay, well, what am I supposed to do? Like, what does it mean to use your network? And this is, even before email, right? It'd be like, what, do I just call random people and just say, hi, my name is Johnny, I don't know what I should do for my life. What do you suggest? Right? It really made no sense to me. And so, but they give advice that is incredibly specific and detailed, down to write this email to this person asking these questions for, at this particular stage in this whole process, and worksheets and so on and so forth. So Designing Your Life, I can't recommend it enough. At least one of the authors, I think, has a Christian background. The book is, it's sold for a general audience. Does talk about God a little bit in just asking questions about purpose, and gives a little bit of their own background, and that background includes some work in Berkeley with folks from a mainline denomination. So I think it's definitely compatible with questions of how, as we're trying to seek, well, what would God have for my life? Now, in terms of some more kind of specific advice, I guess the coming out of my own context. So a little bit of background about myself. My bachelor's is in mechanical engineering. My master's is in civil engineering, water resources. Then I worked as an environmental engineer for a little bit, got my PhD in atmospheric sciences, did a couple postdocs, then went and taught at a physics department for around 9 years, and now I'm teaching at a computer science department. And along the way, I published a book on environmental ethics, and right now I'm working on, like Anne was mentioning, a book on Python programming for scientists and engineers. So that's kind of what has happened. Now I'm at a place in my career, actually, which is kind of a balls up in the air. I'm not sure what to do. I know at my current institution, things are, I can kind of see the picture of where things are going to go and what the limitations are. and opportunities too, but also the limitations. And so I've added into the mix, I recently joined a startup team to work on an interesting little project, group of five folks, is a lot of fun. Okay, so all of that is just to say that when I look at my career, and if you had told me at any stage of that career that this is what I would be doing or this is how it would progress, I would have like said, you've got to be kidding. That's just absolutely nuts. And so I guess the general thing that I would say, sort of contextual advice from that in terms of making decisions, would be plan, but don't get too stuck on whatever your plan is. The main prospect of planning is to figure things out, to get your mind thinking as to what sort of possibilities could arise. And then the second one would be to pivot, and that as you go along, certain opportunities will arise that you had no idea about, and making a pivot is actually a really important thing. So I'll tell one quick story about a pivot. When I was at North Park University, which is where I was in the physics department for 9 years, I had finished a postdoc at University of Chicago and had done a bunch of work with regards to, it was a climate dynamics thing, but at the same time I had learned the programming language Python, because there were my PI had gotten a grant to use Python in atmospheric sciences and had hired a bunch of people who were all learning Python at the same time, so I decided to learn it with them. And so I wrote a little paper applying object-oriented programming to climate models, and it got published. And I was like, I'd like to present it. But I go to different, I went to this one conference, the American Geophysical Union Conference, and, basically had a little poster up, hydrology session, people were like, oh, okay, that's great, whatever, and then, move on. And as I looked around, I was like, there's just no opportunity. And so I contacted some colleagues at Lawrence Livermore National Lab who were also involved with Python. I said, hey, why don't we start a conference on Python and the atmospheric sciences at the next American Meteorological Society's annual meeting? And they said, hey, that's a great idea. Yeah, we'll go in with that proposal. I said, hey, would you guys mind if I'm like the chair of this? Because, since I came up with the idea. Said, okay, you can be chair of it. Okay, so we had a special symposium. And then for the next 7 years, I was chair of the annual Python Symposium on Advances in Modeling and Analysis in Atmospheric Sciences, right? And I stepped down from that just a couple years ago, transitioned to a new chair. And as a result of that, had this entire sort of second career that I was totally not anticipating that was centered around computer science and its application in the atmospheric sciences. And that's why I'm now in a computer science, one of the reasons I'm in the computer science department at the University of Washington Spofford campus. So that's just an example, I think, of the whole pivoting when things you don't anticipate happen, but they end up becoming really important.
Thank you so much, John Mayer. Leslie?
I'm going to start out with kind of an early experience that was very formative for me through the course of my career, and then kind of finish with some takeaways, hopefully, that might be applicable for you in your own life. So I grew up in a Christian home and had a very profound experience at the ripe old age of 9 years old at Bible camp, where I came away from that experience saying to God, I'll do whatever you want me to do. And so from that point on, I really was sensitive to God's leading, would come to him at every fork in the road and just say, okay, what now? And was very sensitive to looking for the doors that God would open for me. And this is a perfect panel for me to be on, I think, because there have been so many transitions in my life. And so I'll give you a quick overview. As an undergrad, I majored in political science. I was always told, I know. So I was always told, K through 12, actually I didn't go to K, but 1 through 12, I was good in math and science, but I just kept thinking, what am I going to do with this? I just didn't have a vision for that at that time. And so in high school, I was student body president. I had a bunch of people that said, you really ought to think about politics, and I was particularly interested in international relations. And so my senior year as an undergrad in poli-sci, I did an internship at the State Department in D.C., and I very quickly realized I needed to get an advanced degree to go anywhere. And then I was thinking about this because this was back in the days of the Cold War. So that kind of dates me. But anyway, I decided that, you know, so many of these politicians had no idea how weapon systems that they were negotiating over actually worked. And I thought, you know, what if I go into engineering? So from poli-sci at Willamette University in Salem, Oregon, I got into a master's program in aero-astro engineering at Stanford.
Wow. Wait,
so, doesn't everybody? So, that was one big transition. And I will tell you, the first year of my master's degree program was one of the hardest years of my life because I was sitting in classes, in engineering classes, in graduate engineering classes with students that already had 4 years of engineering. So anyway, I survived and graduated with my master's in aerospace engineering and went to work for Lockheed Martin in Northern California. And I had some very cool experiences where, you know, it was a matter of walking through the doors that got opened. And I became Lockheed's corporate astronaut. I went through astronaut training with them. They were in conversation with NASA about my flying on a possible mission as a mission specialist or a payload specialist. And then there were a couple of shuttle accidents along the way, and that got a little bit sidetracked. But anyway, so I had that experience, and then I went back to grad school after I had a clearer vision of what I wanted to do with that. I, at Stanford, pursued my PhD in mechanical engineering, focusing on human factors and biomechanics, and worked on spacesuit design and worked on the Hubble Space Telescope program, as well as the International Space Station program, and learned to fly, did scuba diving, worked in the neutral buoyancy tanks, doing a lot of simulation work for both the Hubble Space Telescope and International Space Station programs. And then, let's see, so next transition, right? So as I mentioned, the shuttle accidents, and I was just wrapping up my PhD program and trying to figure out, you know, what next, and Lockheed's management was kind of trying to decide if they were going to stay in human spaceflight or really focus more on unmanned spaceflight. And that was really going to be important to my future there because of the whole astronaut thing. And so things were really uncertain, and about that time I got recruited from a company whose CEO had gone through a similar program at Stanford to be involved in the design and programming of the Bellagio fountains in Las Vegas. So again, like I say, another weird transition. Hydrodynamics is not as far removed from rocket science as you might think. And so I spent about 2.5 years working on that project until we got it up and running. And then I was like, okay, what next? Because I was like, this was really fun. I really enjoyed this project, but I didn't feel a great deal of deep fulfillment from it. You know, it just felt like, okay, this is entertainment. Some people find it inspirational, but it's just not really ringing my bells. So from there, let's see. So I went back and I actually got a job with the RAND Corporation, which is a think tank in California, and does all kinds of policy research, and I was working on various aerospace policy-related issues, which was neat because it brought together my technical side as well as the poli-sci. And, you know, that's one of the lessons learned, is that God never wastes anything. You know what I mean? In his economy, all these experiences, even if they seem disjointed, can be useful, right? And so I did that for a few years, and along the way, I forgot to mention that the Bellagio job got me from Northern to Southern California, and then I got involved with a church where I was on a worship team with a guy who taught at Azusa Pacific University. And he recruited me to start teaching in math and physics at APU, and I'm like, oh, this is what I really want to do, you know, is to work with students, to teach, to get more engaged in the science and faith dialogue. And another God thing that happened along the way sharing this with Sarah yesterday, is that I was actually, once I realized, oh, this is what I want to do, because I started as an adjunct at APU, but they didn't have a full-time position. So I started looking around, and I interviewed at Biola, and they had a position for me, and I was just about to, ready to accept that job when APU came along and said, we have a position as the director of the Center for Research and Science. You'll be doing science and faith dialogue in addition to your teaching. And it came in at the 11th hour, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is such a God thing, you know. So there we go again, you know, walking through that open door. And so I spent 15 years in that position at Azusa Pacific, running this Science, Faith, and Culture lecture series, and it was really like a graduate education in science and faith, which was such a blessing because I found that that is really my sweet spot. So from there, then I had an opportunity to write an op-ed article for CNN's website that ended up going viral with over 500,000 views in less than a week, 70,000 plus shares on Facebook. It was in the top five worldwide most shared news stories on social media on the a Christian response to the discovery of evidence for Einstein's gravity waves. And that then led to a book contract. This book publisher found that article, said, can you write a book on this in 4 months? And I'm like, okay, it's another open door. I better walk through it. And so, yeah, so, and then eventually that kind of led to this position with the ASA. And again, I just feel like, oh, and a couple of years ago, too, by the way, I was approached by someone who said, you know what, we're looking at the possibility of doing a public private Mars mission, Mars flyby mission. Would you be interested in being an astronaut on that mission? And there again, you know, here I'm like, oh, well, if God opens the door, my responsibility is to walk through it. So I'm like, sure. Now, I don't know if that'll ever come to fruition, but again, it's just this whole thing, God never wastes anything, and about our willingness to do what do our part, which is to walk through those open doors that God provides. And so the takeaway for me, and I've kind of been forced to think about this as I teach, because students will go, like, they'll look at this weird career I've had, and they'll say, well, how did you plan that? And I'm like, it wasn't exactly planning. But the takeaway for me is I build a Venn diagram, okay? And one circle is your passions, right? The things you love to do. Another overlapping circle are the things that you're good at, you're skilled at, you're talented in. And we both have things we love to do that we suck at, right? We have things that we're really good at that we hate doing, too. So, right, we want to look at that overlap of those two circles. That's the sweet spot that is, for me, it's where God designs us to be. It's like the motivation comes internally because you're doing something that you love, and externally because you're getting rewarded for doing things that you're good at, right? So that's your sweet spot. And then there's a third circle that overlaps with that, and that's the opportunities that God brings your way that fulfills both of those passions as well as your talents. And so for me, that's the takeaway. It's like, focus on your sweet spot.
Well, thank you so much, Leslie.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wonderful storytelling and a reflection on it. And now, Deb, we would love to hear from you.
Wow. You both have such amazing stories. I only knew half of Leslie's background. That's incredible. My own career path is much more straightforward in comparison. I did a PhD in astrophysics and did a postdoc and was hired as a professor at Calvin College, which I did for 14 years and thought I would do for the rest of my life. So since this is about transitions, I'll focus on that last transition because 6.5 years ago I became president of BioLogos. So I think for me it goes back to a sense of calling I picked up in my undergrad, which was at a Christian university in Minnesota, Bethel University, which was to be at this intersection of science and Christianity. And it was open to different ways of doing that, being a scientist in the church, a Christian in the scientific world, so with that as a center, the different things in my life have, that has given it a sense of continuity. I also remember a moment in graduate school when Ian Hutchinson, he's a wonderful Christian professor at MIT in nuclear engineering, And he was giving a talk to us graduate students about careers. And his piece of advice was, about every 2 years or so, kind of just rethink, is this where God is calling me to be?
Hmm.
Not every week, you know, not every day. You don't have to, like, complete, because you can get caught up in this loop of anxiety. Am I in the right spot? Am I in the right spot? Hmm. And also, not never, you know, don't just stay in the same place, but reevaluate about every 2 years. And so with those kinds of backgrounds, I felt an openness to go where God was calling me, to be able to, you know, pick up and leave something that was going well. Of course, you don't want to do that just willy-nilly. When I did transition to BioLogos, I did it as a leave of absence from Calvin for a year because, you know, we're a grant-funded organization. What if the grants disappear? Like, there's just so many unknowns. But it worked out very well. Also, my husband had a tenured position, so that gives some security, too. I think another thing that helped guide some of the decisions is having a, sort of a portfolio of service in my head, of sort of things I would like to do at some point, ways I would like to serve. And this applies to even things like at church, you'll get asked to do all sorts of different things. And sometimes they ask me to do something like, oh, will you be in the nursery? And I'm like, I'm sorry, that's just not going to, I can't do VBS, I tried VBS once, oh, but, you know, to have kind of in my head, you know, sometime I would like to be on a worship committee or mission committee, and then when you're asked or there's an opportunity to volunteer, I'm like, okay, yeah, I can pick that up and pick that piece in, and that's helped give some order to my, what I say yes and no to have thought that through a bit ahead of time. So my big transition, I had already written a book on science and faith, given a lot of lectures on it, but my main area was still astronomy research. And I was on the advisory council of BioLogos, and so we had an advisory council meeting. And there they were talking about the needs of BioLogos going into the future, and I'm kind of nodding along, and then felt that nudge of the Holy Spirit, which I've only felt a few times in my life, but I'm kind of like, oh, what? Really? What? You know, but it was kind of like, you know, listen up, this is for you. And, well, okay. So I wanted to pay attention to that and not just ignore it. So I did some thinking about it. I actually talked to my pastor about it. My pastor gave a good piece of advice, which was talk to your old friends. So I called up friends from like grad school, the last time I had gone through a major career, like what do I do with my life? And people had known me a long time, and that was helpful. And I finally decided, okay, I think I'm probably ready, you know, after this, I'll do one last summer of astronomy research, and then I'll transition to, like, doing science and faith writing for BioLogos in the summers, something like that. And then it was just a month or two later, I got a phone call, like, would I consider being president of BioLogos? Like, oh, that's what... Okay, so, you know, then still some praying, but really I had already done a lot of the, yes, I'm willing to go where God is leading kind of thinking. So that's how I ended up where I am. I guess my one piece of general advice that I give to students, and I've talked to a lot of Calvin students who were wrestling with these decisions, and you can get caught up in sort of an angsty, have I figured out the one right place where God is guiding me? Have I found the one gem of exactly where I'm supposed to be? And please don't let that hold you back. It doesn't, there isn't one right thing. And you just heard stories of, there's many different things you can do. I think God calls us to love our neighbor and to love him. And if we are loving God with all of our heart and soul, mind and strength, we are doing what God is calling us to do. And I agree with the, you know, your passion, ability, opportunity. And if you can get all three of those, you are so blessed. Okay? If you think of all the people in the world who do not have the privilege of doing even one of those things. And to be able to have all three is just such a blessing. So if you don't get exactly the right mix, it's okay. You love God, you love your neighbor, and you stay open to where he might be leading.
Well, thank you all so much. Let me see how much time we have for questions. So we do have a bit. And would someone like to lead off with a question?
What did you write in your Stanford application?
Oh my goodness. Yeah, that's what I
want to know. For the tape, the question is for Leslie. What did you write in your Stanford astrophysics application after doing an undergrad in political science to get you in?
Wow. It's been so long I don't remember, but I think they liked the fact that I was well-rounded, and it was interesting that one of the things that came up, I actually went to the AeroAstro Engineering office before I found out whether or not I'd been accepted, and I'd submitted all the materials at that point, and the person that was like looking over my files was like, well, you did really well on your GRE scores. And I'm like, okay. And that was the only real feedback I got, which, I don't know. I mean, I think just in hindsight, I think they liked the fact that I was well-rounded and had done a lot of different things. And I had a good academic career, so I was a good student, right? So I probably talked about my passions, that I had always been interested in aerospace and whatnot. So, like I said, it's a little fuzzy at this point, but good question.
Deb, I really like what you said about your pastor's advice and talking to your old friends.
Yeah.
Can you go a little bit more in depth about that, or like how those conversations went, and how we could use that now as we're starting to discern our first fruit of it?
And again, just for the tape, question is for Deb about to go into a little more depth about her pastor's advice to talk to old friends and how would that apply to those looking for jobs right now.
Yeah, maybe it was partly that my pastor didn't feel that they knew me that well. I that could have been part of it. It really helped me, though. I think to get some long baseline on, would this be a huge aberration for me, or does this have ties to how God has always been at work in my life, or what my gifts are. The actual advice I got from my friends came also from their years of, they had now had more advice too, because they'd been through more life experience. And one of them was like, make sure it's with people you would just enjoy being with. Mm-hmm. I'm like, wow, yeah. You know, if all the rest of them are lining up and you get a choice, do it with people you enjoy and you just have fun with. So that's a cool thing. I'm not remembering other specifics from that, but it did feel reassuring to me to not feel like I was just jumping off into some bizarre direction. I think it helped that. And I think if I was younger, I would have been talking with my parents, and maybe some of my teachers who'd known me a long time might have had a similar sort of perspective.
Good advice.
Hi, thank you again for sharing. I'm Jivan, and to be brief, my question is this. The millennial generation is known to be the generation that's the least engaged in their jobs, so transition is to be expected. So can I ask the contrary, when not to transition and how not to transition?
Question for the tape, are there moments when you shouldn't transition but should stay with something that you're working on, and how do you know?
Of course.
You
want to
start?
I guess the thing I would say is just don't burn bridges. Mm-hmm. I think if you're, this isn't direct. It's more of the how. If you're going to transition, how should you do it? I think that, especially if a transition is happening out of frustration or certainly out of anger or anything that is kind of negative emotionally, that the temptation is to burn bridges. And I just think that's a really, I mean, not only is it not something that I think is Christ-honoring, I think it's also really bad advice career-wise, because, you know the saying, right, be nice to everyone on your way up because you're going to meet them again on the way down. you burn the bridges and it's going to be a really bad trip down. So that'd be one thing I would say.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say that as long as you're feeling like you're doing good things in your current position and you're getting the feedback that you're making progress and things are going well and you're appreciated and you're feeling a sense of fulfillment and satisfaction, I think, you know, I go back to the old adage, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, right? And so, I mean, I really think that as long as you feel like you're accomplishing something that is meaningful, and you've got a personal sense of fulfillment from doing it, I don't think that there is any reason to change, and especially if that is being affirmed by the people around you.
And I would just add a point we haven't mentioned is all of the family considerations. It could be you're not able to move if you have a spouse, you have children in school. So those would be reasons not to. Even as a single person, you might want to think deliberately, like, is this the city I want to be in? Is this where I want to minister, where I want to live my life? Is this where my extended family are? We're a very mobile society, and that's very unusual compared to past history. And so there could be reasons you just decide to stay in a certain region. Maybe you're very involved in your church, and that's a ministry you want to stay with. So those could be factors as well.
Well, I think that's about our time for questions, but the good news is the next panel is speed mentoring, so you'll be able to ask these folks questions in smaller groups and hopefully get some interesting answers. Let's thank the panel before I tell you how to...